Today on Voice of the Public, the holiday shopping and spending season is here. Bryce Jorgensen will be joining us to talk about how to stay out of debt this holiday season, how to get out of debt once and for all, and why having a good credit score is so important, and how you can improve yours. Your questions are welcome. Coming up on Voice of the Public, financial advice with Bryce. Bryce Jorgensen, Family Resource Management Specialist and NMSU Associate Professor, joins us right after NPR News from KRWG Public Media. Call 575-646-2212 to be a part of Voice of the Public, made possible by White Sands Federal Credit Union, Steve Montañez Associate Broker, and Oregon Mountain Solar and Electric. Money. Good afternoon. It is 1:06, and this is Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. We are happy to have you along to talk about one of my favorite topics. That's right, money. Yours and mine and ours, and how we're going to get through this holiday season without piling on a whole bunch of new debt. Not only that, how to get rid of our old debt and how to better our credit score. And for all of that, I am happy to welcome Dr. Bryce Jorgensen here, Family Resource Management Specialist and NMSU Associate Professor to KRWG Public Media for Advice with Bryce. How you been?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. Well, listen, we have a lot of territory to cover today, and I'd kind of like to start with credit in general. And anybody with any questions along the way, call 575-646-2212, and we are happy to take your questions about whatever regarding the financial world you have. And I know Bryce will have a good, smart answer for you. Let's start with what credit is. Who decided that we needed to be in debt to get debt? And what can we do to better put ourselves with our best foot forward?
Yeah, you bet. Credit is very important. And a lot of people overlook this when they're thinking about their finances. They just think, you know, I try to pay my bills on time and whatever, and I don't want to be in debt. I know that. You know, pay off my credit cards and save. But what's this whole credit thing? And it really makes a big difference on how much money we have to spend versus things costing more, right? So just to give one example, well, to tell you, I guess, what credit is was part of your question or item. Credit's kind of like a financial grade, right? So we go to school and we get grades, and that kind of tells us how we're doing academically. Well, in the financial world, our personal finances, the credit score is our personal financial grade. And so if you go to a bank, or even if you think about yourself, if you're going to loan somebody money and they come and they have an A, meaning they've paid on time, they've borrowed before, they're never late, they always pay, you're going to give them better rates, lower interest rates, and give them more money, and more likely to give them money than somebody over here that only pays half the time, and they sometimes pay late, and they say, hey, you know, I can't pay right now, how about later? And then they forget about it, right? So paying on time is the number one way to build credit, but credit is incredibly important. I'm just going to give you one example. In Consumer Reports, it had an article about credit, and it showed all of these different ways for I'm just going to use auto insurance, that your auto insurance premium could go up. And it had add a teenager, one at-fault accident, a moving violation, a DWI, two at-fault accidents, two DWIs, right? And those were all moving your, as you'd imagine, it's costing you more for insurance, right? Your premium's going up. The number one thing that raised it more than two DWIs or two at-fault accidents was having poor credit. So you're paying more for auto insurance than I am. If I have good credit and you have bad credit, and that's just one item, right? That's just auto insurance. If you take in all these other insurances, if you take in credit card and borrowing money for auto loans or for a mortgage, they did a study. And they showed that if let's say you and I or Casey were living next door to each other and we had the same size family and the same type of house and the same automobiles, right, the same vacations, and I had really great credit, which, by the way, goes from 300 to 850. So So let's say I have 800 credit, which is about where mine is. And let's just say you have 550.
Okay. Oh, boo.
It's costing you per month to live the same lifestyle that I am, doing the same vacations, driving the same cars, living in the same neighborhood, $1,000 more per month than me.
Wow.
Just by having bad credit. So think of that. I have an extra $1,000 a month to spend because my credit's good. So is it important? It is. Yes.
That's pretty shocking to hear. So, 850 is the top of the credit scale. How many people are in that range?
Quite a few, actually. So there's the range kind of shows, you know, where people are in excellent, good, mediocre, poor. And in the excellent, you've got about 18 to 20% of the 800 to 850. So there's quite a few in there, but there's the majority. Then there's another large percentage in like the very good, you know, that you're going to look at kind of the 740 to 800 range. But the majority are in that next one that's just kind of good. That's kind of like the 660 to 720 range. And then you've got everybody else that's below that. So the majority, actually over 50%, I'd say over 60%, actually are in the good, very good, or excellent range. So that's good to know.
And what are the best ways to improve your credit score?
Yeah, good question. So the number one way is to pay on time, right? So that's, again, how good are we at, if we loan money to somebody and they're saying, I'm going to pay you this much every month, pay on time, and they do it, fantastic, right? Yeah, but if they don't, then that's an issue. So from whatever creditor we borrow from, if we're paying on time and they're not reporting us to the agency, that one of the three credit bureaus, mm-hmm. right, Equifax, Experian, or TransUnion, then it's showing that we're a good bet. People can loan us money and at a lower rate and at better terms, and they'll get their money back. So the number one way is to pay on time. The number two thing to do is to keep your balances low. So it's called the utilization rate, right? So if I have a credit card that has $1,000 on it and I use $300 or less, 30% or less, it shows that I'm in control of my finances. I'm not strapped. I'm not, you know, maxing out my credit card. In fact, I'm not even at 50%. I'm at 30. And they say, wow, Bryce knows how to use his credit cards and his debt. He's only using 30% of his available credit. He gets a bump in his score. But again, my neighbor over here that doesn't have a very good credit, they're using $998 out of their $1,000 or even going a little above it, right? They're like, okay, this guy doesn't have control of his finances, so that's going to hurt it. So that's the number two thing is, what do we have available credit-wise, and how much of that are we using, right? And that's where people make a mistake of cutting up credit cards. So let's say that they have, of all their credit cards, $10,000 worth, and they have, let's say, $5,000. So they're at 50%. Not as good as 30%, but they're not, you know, at 10,000. So that's pretty good. And then they go, oh, I don't, you know, I've heard that cutting up credit cards is good because you don't want too many credit cards. And then they go and they cut up their credit card, and all of a sudden their 10,000 drops to 7,500. And now 5,000 out of 7,500 is even more. Right now, instead of 50%, they're like up at 70, 75 or whatever percent. And now that hurts their credit. So the number three thing I'll say is length of credit history. So the longer you have your credit history and showing that you pay on time, then the better the score is. So again, if I've been paying for 25 years on time versus, say, my son who's 18 and he's been paying on time, but it's only been, you know, a year. Well, obviously I have, it helps me more because I'm showing a better track record over 25 years. So that's the other thing about cutting up a credit card. A lot of people say, well, I'm going to, you know, cut up the credit card and whatever, they heard it somewhere that, you know, too many credit cards are bad. So they cut the credit card up. And the problem is, not only did that lower the utilization rate or the maximum available credit, but that's the credit card they've had the longest. So now they used to have 8 years of credit showing, and they cut and closed that credit card, and the next one was only 4 years. So boom, their 8 years track record just shrunk to four, mm-hmm. and that's going to hurt them as well. So those are three areas that you want to look at.
All right, very good. We have a question from Bob, who's following along on Facebook today, who says, I have little to no income this year due to COVID. Would it be a good idea to convert my traditional IRA holding to a Roth IRA this year?
Yeah, definitely. If you want to look at that with your tax professional, but I did something similar to that as well when I built and I had you do solar or whatever and you have a credit. I had a 401k from my previous job to a Roth IRA, and that money that I would have had to pay offset the credit I had, or my credit offset it. So if you're normally making, you know, whatever it is, 50, 60, 80, 100,000, whatever, and you're now transitioning it over to the Roth and you're making hardly any, well, that's going to offset what you have to pay. So I think that's a great idea. I'm not a tax. Again, I don't know if you sent out the declaration that this is educational and we're not liable for anything, and I'm not a tax attorney or anything like that. But it sounds like it would be a good option to look into, yes.
All right. Thank you. But really, back to the credit agencies. Who established the credit agencies and gave them all this power over us?
That is a good question. It's been going on for years. And I think I don't know the answer to that, the history of it. But I do know that the banks and other lending institutions were kind of taking some they're doing loans and things that they weren't sure of, so that the interest rates were all kind of higher, mm-hmm. a little bit more predatory back then. And they said, hey, we need to figure out something. So I don't know. I don't think it was the government that came in and said, hey, we need to figure this out. I think these agencies just said, how about this? And they started it up and said, we can tell you what their kind of grade is on their financial grade. And the better their grade, and they should be getting, discounts mm-hmm. and things. They shouldn't be paying as high as these other people. So I don't actually know the answer to that. I'd have to look that up. That's a good question. Yeah.
Well, do you recommend that we call each one of them once a year to make sure that our credit report is looking right?
Yeah, so you definitely want to get your credit score or your credit report once a year from each of the credit bureaus. So this is very important. When I teach classes at NMSU, I have them pull their free credit report so they can look at it. Because as I mentioned earlier, it's definitely going to be costing us more if our credit is low. And lots of people that I've told, and other people I found out, that they went and they checked their credit, they pulled their credit, and they're like, hey, what is this? This isn't mine. Mm-hmm. And they went and found that they're part of some identity theft, or somebody that had a close name also is on theirs, and so they got it off. But it had been on there for like 3 or 4, or more years, hurting their credit all this time, costing them more for insurance and credit and everything else, and they can't get that back, right? I mean, their credit improves now, but what about the last 4 years that they've mm-hmm. been paying more? So you definitely want to pull your credit. You want to look at it and make sure that you know everything that is on there. So let me tell you the best ways to do that, because it's free and everybody should do it. So you can pull once a year from each of the three credit bureaus. I think and this has not gone off, but because of Experian, how they got kind of hacked into and some identities and stuff stolen,
right.
that you can now pull it once a month, and possibly even it was weekly, but once a month. So you'll want to, I guess I should have checked on that. That's how it's been, and I don't think that's come off, but definitely once a year. But even more than that, you can also put a credit freeze and unfreeze on there. It used to be cost money, and that's for free. So we can talk more about that. But let me tell you how to pull your credit for free.
All right.
So you can go to Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. You just put kind of a .com on the end of that, and it will come up. And you can look at that. But the best way is to go to annualcreditreport.com, and that connects you to all three of them. So not free credit report. That actually isn't free. It costs you money.
Yeah.
Annualcreditreport.com is where you go, and then you can pull. And what I recommend that people do, you can click the boxes of which ones you want to pull. It asks you a few questions to make sure you're you, right? Like, which of these cards have you had over the last 6 years? And you have to, like, make the right decisions. Otherwise, it locks you out. So you have to try again, like, later. So you answer the right questions and you can pull it. So I would recommend, and if you haven't pulled it in a while, pull all three, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. And you get that because sometimes some creditors only report to one or two and not all three. And you look at all of them. And then, again, I think you can pull it every month, so I don't think this is an issue. But normally, if it's only once a year, you wait a year and then you pull another one. Let's say you do Experian in January. And then you 4 months later, you do Equifax. And then 4 months later, you do TransUnion. Well, 4 months later, you're back up to the Experian, right? So every 4 months, you can be pulling one of the three credit bureaus and seeing what's on your score, right? So at the first, I recommend all three and then do it every 4 months. The other way to kind of do it, it's not as good as pulling your actual credit reports, is to do something like on Credit Karma, right? You can get on Credit Karma or Credit Sesame. I prefer Credit Karma, but whatever people want to use. And you can sign up for that, and that's free. And it will show you, I think Credit Karma uses Experian and TransUnion. And it will show you the, what's on there on both of those, the credit, and it tracks. And so if there's like new credit pull or something else that looks fishy, it will send you an email and alert you and say, hey, did you do this? And you can get on, and they right there on their site, you can then report and say, that's not me, and kind of tackle getting that off your credit. So I really like Credit Karma. It kind of monitors your credit for you so you can see what's going on. And it not only gives you your credit, what's on your credit, but it gives you a score. It's not 100% accurate with like the, you know, what the if you're going to go and get a loan for a mortgage or something. That's called the FICO 8, and they use what's called a Vantage score, but it's pretty close. At least you can kind of see within about 20, 25 points what your scores are with those two credit bureaus. So again, annualcreditreport.com, that gives you your free credit pulls. And again, Credit Karma, something like that to kind of monitor your credit also allows you to do that.
And Christian asks, what exactly am I looking for in that report, and how easy is it to change things?
Yeah. So in there, it tells you across the five different ways that they score your credit score. So again, what's your utilization rate? So it says, of your available credit, you're using this percentage. Then it says, have you had any new credit lately? Have there been any credit pulls? Have you got a new credit card? Did you just apply for a new loan? It tells you how many lates you have had, 30, 60, 90-day lates, and how bad those are, or if you haven't. And then it kind of shows you, if you like on Credit Karma, it shows you green, yellow, red, right? So if you're in doing a really great job, then those things are green. If you're getting multiple pulls or going to these stores and signing up for the store cards, which I don't recommend you do, then and they're pulling your credit, and all of a sudden you have three or four or five credit pulls, then all of a sudden that turns to yellow or red, right? So you're looking for, it shows you, it breaks it down and says, do you have any lates? Anybody checked your credit, and have you got new credit lately? What is your utilization rate? How much of your available credit are you using? How many accounts do you have, and what are they, right? So maybe you have a first mortgage and a second mortgage and a car loan and a student loan and two credit cards. It'll show you on there what that is and what the actual balance is for that. So that's what it shows you. So what you're looking for is there anything glaring? Does it say that somebody pulled my credit and I don't know who did that and why? Does it show that I have a credit card and that's not my credit card? What is this? I don't know what this is, right? So anything that it's showing that you don't know what it is, that's a red flag. And then you'd go through and try to take that off. And so if it's not yours, it's fairly easy to just kind of just say, hey, this isn't mine. And, you know, it gives ask questions and things. I mean, anybody that has more detailed questions can contact me at bryce.j@nmsu.edu, bryce.j@nmsu.edu. And I'd be happy to kind of go into more detail than what I can do here on the radio.
Super. It's kind of disturbing that when someone goes and looks at your credit, that affects your credit score, right?
Yeah. And the reason why it does that again, and it, you know, the ding that you get on that depends, again, if it's a mortgage company you're looking to buy a new mortgage, you're refinancing, or if it's a car loan, or if it's a credit card, or if it's a cell phone. You know, those are different amounts because, you know, you're coming to me and wanting to borrow money for, say, to buy a new house or something like that. I want to look and see, well, it looks good now, but have you been looking for other credit, right? Mm-hmm. Not. You know, so like, are you also looking for a new credit card and a new car and this other loan? You
know? I see.
So that changes the situation if they're looking for new credit in other ways. So I want to know, as the creditor, and you're coming to me to borrow money, is your situation stagnant and that's where you are, or is there other potential debt that you're looking at getting into?
All right.
That said, I want to make sure people know that I'm also a loan officer, for example, here in New Mexico, and I tell everybody, get two or three quotes from different lenders. You know, maybe you're like the credit union and a bank and a mortgage broker or whatever. And when each of them pulls your credit, it only counts as one pull, because we expect people to go and, compare across what's going on. So as long as it's for the same reason you're looking to refinance or purchase a home, you could go and have five different banks or lenders pull your credit, and it's the same as one person pulling your credit. It doesn't hurt it any more than that, as long as it's done within like 30 to 60 days, right? You can't do like 30 days and then 6 months later go and do it. That'll be a different pull, right?
I see.
So I want people to know that, because they should be comparison shopping, especially for things as big as a mortgage and how much interest they're going to be paying over the life of that loan.
I see. 575-646-2212. This is Voice of the Public. I'm Casey Counts, and I'm joined today by Family Resource Management Specialist Bryce Jorgensen, who is here to help you answer your financial questions. So call now. We have until 2 o'clock to get those questions answered for you. And Voice of the Public is made possible today by Steve Montañez, Associate Broker with Steinborn & Associates, 141 Roadrunner Parkway, Suite 141. Information and active listings at 575-532-3698. And from White Sands Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative providing loans and deposit accounts for consumers, offices in Las Cruces, El Paso, and TRC. Information at wsfcu.com. And from Oregon Mountain Solar and Electric, a locally owned full-service system integrator providing solar and electric solutions through discovery, design, and installation of both residential and commercial. Information at OregonMountainSolar.com. You want to talk about debt now, Bryce, and how to get out of it?
Sure. Well, one of the things, you know, just kind of going into that, because we are going into the holiday season, and sometimes people get a little crazy during the holiday season, and they end up with more debt that they didn't plan on after the holiday season. So maybe we can kind of, I can kind of start there and move into debt if that's okay.
Yeah, Bryce, you know, it's 2020 and we need some feel good this holiday season.
Well, you know, it has been a crazy 2020, that's for sure. And like the previous, you know, caller said, they haven't been bringing in a lot of income. And so what's problematic is, I share this with my class and things as well, is often we compare ourselves to others, right? We compare what we have to our neighbors. Hey, they got this new car, new truck. I need that. Hey, they're going on this vacation. I need that. Look at my friends on Facebook. They're doing this. I want to do that. And if we stop doing that and kind of look more about what we do have and have more gratitude, right, an attitude of gratitude, then we don't care so much. We're happy for what people are doing and having. But when you actually sit down and talk with those people that are doing all those things, not always, but often, they're doing it on credit and they're going into debt and they're stressed out and their life looks great, but they don't feel great, right? Mm-hmm. And so we need to look inside ourselves and say, hey, you know, what brings joy? What brings happiness? And it's not just stuff, right? The best things in life are free. And so if we have not been, due to COVID, if we've been laid off or we're not making as much money as we were before, guess what? Let's make it a different type of holiday season, right? We don't have to buy every single toy there is for our kids. We don't, you know, it's just, what are some different things that we can do and without having to buy too many gifts, and realizing that 2020 has been a challenge and maybe we don't have a lot of things and there's these spending pressures. Well, let's have it be a minimalist Christmas, but a one that has lots of experiences. So I want people to be thinking about, for the holiday season, how can we make it memorable without spending a lot of money and without feeling like I have to compete with my neighbor or buy stuff that in 2 or 3 months is going to, you know, kids going to forget about it and it's going to be at the bottom of the drawer. So what are meaningful gifts that we could buy fewer things, more meaningful, that they would enjoy more? what are some things that maybe we can give our time or homemade type, you know, gifts? Like my family, for example, I'm one of one of six kids, my siblings.
Yeah.
And we're talking about my parents, you know, and we're like, hey, how neat would it be instead of just, we can still buy them something or whatever, but create experiences with them, right? Mm-hmm. So my dad likes to golf. How about if instead we go and we're, my mom likes to work in the garden, where we go and spend 2 or 3 hours talking and doing something she loves that's really meaningful, or going and talking while I'm going golfing with my dad, rather than just like, hey, here's whatever, you know, a gift card to whatever.
Yeah.
So how, you know, what are some things that we can do? So that's where I want to start with, is just, it's been a hard year. A lot of people have less money. A lot of people, whether however much money they have or not, they overspend on Christmas or holiday things. We don't have to compete. You can be happy and find happiness with doing other things and without getting into debt. So I want people to create a plan and be purposeful, right? Be mindful about what you want, what will be meaningful, and what you're spending. And if you haven't been planning for the whole year and putting aside money and saving, and you just think, well, I guess I'll just put it on the credit card and this next year I'll just be paying it off, that's problematic, because you're spending more money on every gift, because you're going to not only pay it off, but also interest. Why do that, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to get people out of the habit of borrowing on a credit card and then paying it off over time. If they can pay it off immediately, right, they use the credit card on stuff they'd normally buy and then pay it off at the end of the month, that's totally fine, even though research shows that people that use credit cards spend 5% more than they would if they didn't. So if you're getting 1% cash back and you spend 5% more, you're still negative. But anyway, going back to the credit card. So let's just go now. Say that we're on the other end of the holidays and we didn't listen to advice with Bryce, and we spent more money and bought too many gifts and did things that now we're having buyer's remorse and we're putting ourselves in the future. Ah, I have this debt. Now what do I do, right? How do I get out of debt? Well, the number one way to take control of our finances, to win financially, which is really what I desire for everybody, all my students, everybody I work with, talk to, is to win financially, right? We need to create a plan, and we can't create a plan unless we know where our money's going. So you have to track it some way. That doesn't mean you have to take every receipt and write it down. You could use mint.com. You could look at your credit card or bank statement. Whatever is easiest and works for you, look at where you're spending your money, get it in some categories, and say, where's the money going, and is that where I want it to go, right? What are my financial goals? I want to save up for maybe a new car. I want to save up to go on this vacation. I want to save up for whatever it is to pay off debt. But right now, all my money is going out to eat, for example, or doing something else. So we need to, in order to make decisions, we need to know the numbers. It's, you know, you go watch a basketball game, and if they just shot and there is no numbers, didn't know how many fouls, didn't know, you know, how many three-pointers or two-pointers, you know, it wouldn't even be fun to watch after a while, because you're like, well, who's winning? What's going on? We have to pretend like we're in our own financial game and keep track of the score. And the score is, where am I spending my money? And then what do I want to spend my money on? And make, you know, we may have to make some shifts and change. So that's the first part, is knowing where our money is going. And then once we know where our money is going, then we can kind of make some choices, right? And decrease spending in areas that we don't want to. So maybe we're going out to eat too much, or buying too much of clothing or whatever it is. And we say, you know what, I don't really need to spend that much on this area. So why don't I cut back a little bit? I don't have to cut it out completely, but cut back. And as we start plugging those spending leaks, these areas that we spend money that we don't really need to, then we find this extra money that we can then put towards accelerating our debt payoff. And what you want to do is what I call the debt snowball. And so if you have, say, 5 different debts, you look at the one that's going to be paid off, the lowest balance, and you pay minimums to the other 4, all the other ones, and you get all the extra money you can, and you attack that lowest amount of debt, right? And so maybe that's a credit card that has $600 on it, and you attack it, and then that's paid off, and it's an emotional win. You're like, hey, I just paid off. I had five debts. Now I have four. That's awesome. Now I'm going to take this money and do it to the next lowest balance, and you just keep doing that until it's paid off. So that's what I'd recommend doing. The next thing that I want to say is, with COVID and with people losing jobs and being laid off and other things, our creditors actually are sympathetic to us right now, right? And so if we have high interest credit cards or whatever that may be, I would call them and say, hey, you know, I'm going through some rough times. I want to pay you, but I'm feeling kind of stressed out, financially stressed out, in other ways stressed out. And this 29% on my credit card, it's really stressing me out. You know, how can you help me? Because I want to pay you, but I'm getting to the point where I may just throw my hands and not pay anybody. You know, so what can you do to help me out? And they're going to work with you, most of them, and say, hey, thank you for calling us. We want to work. How about this? And they're going to lower your rate down to 14% or 9%, still making some money on interest, but not be crazy. And that's just a call that you just now change your 19, 24, 29% credit card down to 9 or 14 or something like that. So make some calls, talk with your creditors, see what they can do. Let them know you're financially stressed out, if that's the truth, and try to work with them to get in a better situation, because right now they're willing to work with you.
575-646-2212. This is Voice of the Public, Advice with Bryce on KRWG Public Media. We're so glad you're here and happy to answer your questions between now and 2 o'clock while Bryce is with us. I want to talk a little bit about, now that we've got our debts paid off, it's time to invest. And boy, we have some big question marks in terms of what to expect from the market over the next few months, years. And what about Bitcoin?
Those are good questions. Good questions. As we're getting closer to the end of the year, you know, there are some financially wise things to do with your money to kind of help with taxes and things. And one of those is to max out your 401k or your IRA, right? If you're doing a Roth IRA, that's not going to help you tax wise, but it's definitely a good thing to do, max out, because you can only do $6,000 a year in your IRA or Roth IRA. Unless you're over 50, then you could do 7,000. So maxing your 401k or IRA out would be helpful, not only for investing, but also with your taxes. Now, investing is one of the top areas that people are most interested in, that I found for my classes and people that I work with. And what people need to understand is that there's cycles, and investing is got to be kind of more for the long term, right? We're not day traders. And so you got to look and say, where do I invest my money? And what happens when the market goes down? Because the main reason why, for example, let me just give you a statistic for an example. So the last two decades, there's been a return of about 8.5%, right? But if you took out the the consumers only got 4.5% instead of 8.5%. And you say, well, why did they only get 4.5 when the market did 8.5? And some only got about 2.1%. And it's because of fear and fees. So for every 1% in fee that you're paying on your mutual fund or your stock or whatever it is, that costs you a decade of retirement, was what it shows you, because of compound interest. So you want to keep fees really low, and that's index funds or index ETFs, but index mutual funds. And again, if people want to talk to me about what these things are, an index fund or a mutual fund is kind of lots of stocks in one. So for example, the S&P Standard & Poor's 500 index fund is a top 500 companies, the large companies in the U.S. And so that has Apple, you know, and Google and Walmart and all those kind of things, Amazon, Netflix. And so you say, if I want a little piece of 500 companies, I just need to put money into the S&P 500 index fund. And now I have a little piece of all these 500 companies, and that's much more diversified than having just your money in, say, Apple or just in Netflix, right? Because a company could go down, and then if you, all your eggs are in that one basket of that one company, boom, all of them, you know, go down with it. But if you have spread out with, say, 500 companies and 20 of them go down, but the other 480 are doing fine, you're protected. Does that make sense? So that's a mutual fund. And the lowest cost, the lowest fees are index funds. And so you want to get on and, you know, with whoever, if you have a 401k or 403b, if you're an NMSU or education, and look at the different funds that they offer, and you can see it shows you the cost to ratio. So, for example, an actively managed mutual fund might cost 0.7 or 0.8 or even 1.1%, where an index fund could be 0.05. It's way, way, way cheaper, index funds. And 96% of the time over a 10-year period, index funds beat any actively managed fund. So the question is, if they are going to beat the actively managed funds and they're cheaper, why not just go with index funds? That's a great question. You should. So go with index funds. So that's the one thing is fees. The other one is fear. When the market goes down, people freak out and they go, oh, no, the market went down, right, like this last recession, and they pull their money out. They had $100,000 in their, you know, and then it went down, and now they see they only have 65, and they're like, I don't want to lose all my money, so they pull it out. That's the worst thing you can do because it's going to go back up. 100% of the time, it goes back up. World Wars, 9/11, you know, whatever it is, the dot-com, the recession that we just had, it always goes back up, and it, you only take a loss if you pull your money out. And so really what smart investors – will do is they say it's on sale, right? This $100 pair of jeans is now only $60. I'm going to buy it, right? So now they say, wow, yeah, my money went from $100,000 to $65,000. But guess what? If I put more, I know it's going to go back up. So if I put more money in now and it goes back up, boom, I just also made that extra money. It's on sale. So that's what people need to understand is two things. Get low fees, which are the index funds. And those, again, outperform the market, the actively traded. And then don't pull out when the market goes down. You add more because it's going to go back up. And so you just think, hey, look, every year winter comes, right? Summer comes, winter comes. We just know that winter comes. Every year there's going to be a couple months where the market goes down a little bit. Every 3 to 5 years, if there's a bear market where it goes down maybe 20, 30, 35%. But guess what? 100% of the time, it comes back. So if we just have in our mind, it's going great now, but guess what? It's going to go down. And when it goes down, this is what I'm going to do. And you have a plan, then you're set. You're fine. Just don't pull out.
What if you're getting close to retirement?
Then you should definitely have more of your money in some kind of more safe investments like bonds and other things, right? So stocks are more volatile and go up and down where bonds are kind of set. So definitely get with, you know, if you have a lot of money and you're closer to retirement and you're not sure what to do, then I would get with somebody that can help you with financial planning. But for people that are younger, I tell them not to get a financial planner because they take their part of the fees, right? Mm-hmm. And all you really need to do if you don't have especially a whole lot of money to invest, which most people don't have tens of thousands of dollars just to invest, they're kind of investing little at a time, is you max out your 401k, especially if there's a match, right? If you're going to put some money in and your employer matches, that's the best. And then all you really need to do if you're doing something outside of that, like starting a Roth IRA or an IRA or something, is to choose good index funds that are across different areas of the economy and stick with it. And that's all, you know, you don't need to pay somebody to try to move all your stuff around and cost you money. Just stick money in some index funds and you'll be fine. As you get older, like you said, and closer, then you may need a little bit more help. You need to switch some of those less of your money in the stock market and more in the bonds because those give a set rate of return and are much more secure.
Is there a certain amount of years away from retirement that you would recommend we start thinking about that?
Yeah, so kind of the main thing that people say, and they do this, like a lot of people get on and they get a new job and they go, oh, look, you can choose. You know, like we have Fidelity at NMSU and TI Craft. And so they go, you can choose from these. And some of those are called retirement funds, where it's like if you're going to retire, say, in 2065, then you just put all your money in the 2065, and it has the split between stocks and bonds. And as you get older, that fund will then transfer more to bonds and fewer to stocks. It kind of does it for you. And so that's the easy way that people are just like, oh, well, that kind of does it for me and the retirement fund, so I'll just stick my money there. So what it normally does is you take 100 years and you subtract your what your age is, kind of should be bonds, and what your, you know, the other portion should be stocks. So if you're 40, then maybe you have, you know, 60-65% in stocks, mutual funds, and 35-40% in bonds. So as you get older, you're getting, you know, 55 or 60. Now you have 60-65% in bonds and 30-35% in stocks. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. You're not suggesting I go all in on Bitcoin?
Oh, Bitcoin. Okay. I forgot about that. Cryptocurrency.
Yes.
So I've actually done a lot of research with this. I'm not telling anybody what to do.
Right.
But I have a fairly significant portion in different cryptocurrencies. And I think I'm on some different listservs and things from investors, you know, and having obviously the job that I do and trying to educate people about it. And I was actually creating a program that I could deliver about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin in case people were interested and didn't get that far. But my take on it is this. If 90% of your money should be kind of in these index funds and the bonds, right? There's bond index funds as well and stock index funds, these mutual funds. And maybe 10% can be kind of more risky investments, right? Kind of not play money, but that you can buy individual stocks. Maybe you're like, I just really think Apple and Tesla are going to do awesome. So you're going to take a little bit of your money and stick it just in those individual ones, or Bitcoin or Ethereum, for example, cryptocurrency. So that's what I've done. And I have multiple different stocks, mutual funds, et cetera. And I'm just right now, I'm telling you, over this last year, Bitcoin, I'm up 87% is the rate of return for Bitcoin. And the next closest thing is about 45% on a stock that I have. So I think, and from what I've read, and it's becoming more and more accepted, and more there people are trying to make it easier to use and easier to buy, like on Robinhood, for example. There's a Robinhood app, and you can buy and, you know, sell and trade kind of different things, and it's a zero cost for the trade. It's becoming easier and easier. And here's what they say. They said if it became easy and you could do it actually in your retirement fund, if everybody, not the big banks and corporations, but just individual people that had retirement accounts, put just 1% of their portfolio into Bitcoin, then at that time it was about $8,500 or at $8,500 per Bitcoin, it would jump up to about 80,000. They go tenfold. And they said, now, even if we don't do that, it's going to do pretty well. So I, you know, from what all the things I read, I'm not predicting anything. This is Bryce's own opinion, but it's gone from earlier this year around 8,000, actually dipped down to even 6,500. It's currently at about 16,000, mm-hmm. And I think it'll get up to about 40,000 to 50,000 by this time next year. So I have some money in it, as well as Ethereum, as well as some of the smaller crypto. But again, that's part of my 10% that I like to play with. And so if people are interested in that and want to talk to me more about it, they can definitely email me. But I think it's here to stay. I think it's something that I used to not think it was good. And I did a lot more research, and now I think it's something that's beneficial to look at.
What changed your mind?
All the research I did of how many people. So they're doing a lot of things with the federal government of getting it approved. There's a company called BACT, B-A-K-K-T, that now is kind of like the FDIC, where you put money in, you know, your bank account, and it's protected up to $250,000. They're setting those things up. On the New York Stock Exchange, they're doing some things to make it easier. You see these large corporations and banks that are putting millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars into different cryptocurrency type things. And so the basic, it's kind of like the dollar, you know, for other things. Bitcoin is like the coin, that allows kind of all those other cryptocurrencies to happen. And so there's a lot of exciting things happening. There's different government now intervention that is much more lenient and understanding it more, mm-hmm. where it used to be the ugly stepchild. It's now becoming more mainstream. And so I just see it with the blockchain technologies and things moving forward. And in the future, I think it's going to be much more mainstream.
I know I'm old because it scares me.
Yeah, it does. I understand.
It scares me, Bryce. All right, 575-646-2212. We only have 10 minutes left, so I can't believe it, but we still have a lot of territory to cover. Get your question in now if you have a financial question for Bryce Jorgensen, who is with us for just the next 10 minutes. We've been talking a lot about credit and getting out of debt and not overspending this holiday season. And now I want to move on to, you've made a couple of references to teaching your classes. Why aren't we teaching kids financial education at a younger age? And what should parents be doing to get them ready for the world?
Great question. And that's a great way to kind of end up on that topic. Before I forget, though, I just wanted to hit on one more thing.
Sure.
That right now, the Fed just came out and said they're keeping interest rates low. Mm-hmm. And so if people listening are thinking and have the finances, right, to purchase a home or they're in a home and they haven't refinanced for a while, I really recommend it. I have two investment properties and my personal property I'm currently going through. Rates are under 3%. You know, it's crazy. At 30-year mortgages, they're like 2.85 to maybe 3.25, depending on what your credit is again. And so don't quote me on that, but that's where they are for people with good credit. And that's way below usually what a 15-year would have been. So one way to save money and put more money in your pocket is to maybe go out and think about refinancing your home because rates are so low. All right,
Before you move on, can you get a 30-year mortgage on an investment property?
Yeah, definitely. You can do 30 or 20 or 15. It's the same as a regular, yeah.
Okay, well,
so I
thanks
have
for
multiple,
that.
Like... kind of the short-term rental Airbnb type properties as well as long-term rentals and those type of things. And so I do some flips, like buy and rehab. So if people are interested in that, again, you can contact me with the email and I'll talk to you more about that. That's a different type of investing that most people aren't as interested in, so I didn't want to get into those details. But definitely financial literacy and why aren't we teaching our kids? That's a question I ask all the time. As I was doing grad school, I did a policy paper on financial literacy of high school students and middle school students and which states had it as a mandatory class, which states had kind of just concepts where you'd cover some of the information like in a math class or something, and then there's states that don't have anything. And I'm just like, why? I'm biased because this is my topic and I think it's really important, but one of the top reasons for conflict in marriage and divorce is money, financial strain, financial stress. It causes depression and anxiety and, lots and lots of things that could improve our lives if we just understood a little bit some of the basics of money and of credit and of debt and investing in the insurance and those kind of things. Yeah, we don't teach it in school. We're teaching all these histories and lots of English and math that people are never going to use, but it's good to get you in. And I'm not dissing any whatever, but please let's teach our kids some life skills. And one of those is how to manage money. Let's teach our adults that because they went through and most adults. So most of my research actually is on the financial literacy of emerging adults. And the way that they learn, number one, has been going to their parents. And what I found through my research and other research that I've read and looked through is that parents usually don't know a whole lot to teach their kids. And because mm-hmm. parents aren't for sure, right, they're just kind of going trial and error. They're like, well, I'll try this. I guess it works, I don't really know. But here's this guy. They said this insurance guy's good, so I guess I'll just do this.
Right.
They don't know how to compare insurance. They don't know whether to get whole life insurance or term life insurance. They don't know, what the whole process of buying a home and a mortgage is. They don't understand, how to get out of debt or track their finances, where to invest. There's all these how to build their credit. And so they just kind of they know a few things, like don't go into debt or try to pay off your credit card debt or, you know, a few things, but it's not a whole lot. So what do they teach their kids? They're thinking, I don't feel comfortable myself, so I'm just going to pass on the only couple things that I know. Don't go into debt and try to stay out of credit card debt. And that's almost all they can tell their kids. You know, save money, right?
Right.
Save some for a rainy day. Don't overspend. Don't go into credit card debt. And that's all people know what to say. And that's sad to me. So we do need to educate parents. We need to educate our college students. We need to educate our high school and middle school students so that they are learning how to win financially. You know, you have these wealthy people that teach their kids, make sure that they know how to do it. It's really disenfranchising people if they don't know about money. And so my goal, and that's why I love teaching classes, I have about 160 students in my class this semester, and it's called Financial Fitness for Freshmen. I'm teaching them about college loans, you know, the different types of loans, what that looks like when they're done and how much it's going to cost paying it off. Here's an example I give them using credit cards that everybody could use. If you had a credit card of, I think it's just $5,000, is it $5,000 and it's at like 19%, and you cut it up and didn't close it, but you cut it up and didn't ever use it again and only paid the minimum to pay it back, it would take, I don't have the exact numbers here, but it's like 18 years or something like that to pay it off. Lots of years, at least 11 or 12 years to pay off, and you'd pay of the $5,000 like about $8,300. So it comes up to be $1.61 per dollar that you spent. So if they go out and go to lunch and it costs $10 for lunch and they put it on their credit card and didn't pay it off, it actually costs them $16.10. If somebody goes and buys a piece of furniture or whatever for $100 on their credit card, nope, it's actually $161. If they buy something for $1,000, nope, it was $1,610. So people need to think in their mind, am I willing to pay an extra 61 cents on every dollar if I don't pay my credit card off? Is that worth it? If I'm going to pay $100, is it worth $161? Well, if it's not, don't buy it, right? So these are the kind of things that people need to understand, that if I have a credit card and I've got $5,000 and it's a very pretty high interest rate and I'm just paying the minimum, you're paying a lot of money to interest. It's going to cost you $1.61 for every dollar you borrow. And that is why paying interest out, if you pay your credit card down, that's money in your pocket. As you pay your credit down, guess what that does? It improves your credit score. Well, what's that? More money in your pocket, right? So the three ways I think people can really put more money in their pocket is they track their spending and understand, and these are the things parents and everybody should be teaching their kids. We track our spending, we know where our spending's going, and the things that we can make decisions, and we kind of plug some of those spending leaks, right? We pay ourselves first, so we save first and spend the rest. So instead of spending and hoping there's money at the end, and then we save it, that never happens. We pay ourselves first at like 10% and then spend the other 90. Then that's fine because you're paying yourself and saving some money first, right? And then we don't go above the 100%. You don't go over. You don't go into debt. If we could just do those three things, we track our spending so we can make choices, pay ourselves first, the savings, and don't spend more than we earn, that's how you become a millionaire, right? That's, you put the savings into investing and use compound interest. That's how you become wealthy and not just live paycheck to paycheck. People go out and think that having a loan on a car is normal. I don't have loans on my cars. I save up and I pay cash because I can pay cash for it. And it's going to not cost me 1.5 times what the car's worth because I'm paying money in interest.
You're so weird,
Bryce. Kind of thing. I know, I'm a weirdo. I don't buy a brand new car either. This is another thing I teach my students, right? Don't go and buy a brand new car because as soon as you drive it off the lot, guess what? It just depreciated. Buy a 1 or 2 or 3 year old car that has low mileage. And let somebody else take the hit, and now you get a better deal on this car, and it's going to last you a long time. So, I don't know. You can get on and listen to Dave Ramsey. You can listen to Clark Howard that's on the radio. You can go to their websites and look at those. I would pick up and read some financial books. Dave Ramsey has some good ones. 4 Laws of Financial Prosperity is one that I give to my clients. I do some financial counseling. So start educating yourself so that you can teach your kids, because guess what? The school system's not doing it.
All
so
right.
You do it.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you so much, Bryce. On that note, our time is up for today. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you again soon.
Thanks, everyone.
And the Voice of the Public Financial Advice with Bryce today, made possible by Steve Montañez, associate broker with Steinborn & Associates, White Sands Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative, and Oregon Mountain Solar and Electric, a locally owned full-service system integrator. And Leora Zeitlin is...